You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Yo, Chris, what's up, man? This is Marco out here in Denver. Dude, love your show. You're crushing it, man. You seem to be crushing it, like, right off the bat. So keep it up, man. I love the show format. Interviews are great. I found this thing like a month ago. I've been going through the episodes of the bands that I love, like Emery, Taking Back Sunday, and Thursday. Just finished that one with Tucker. That was a killer conversation, man. Loved learning about like his musical experience outside of Thursday. I didn't really know any of that stuff about him. So, yeah, man. And I also love always getting suggestions of new bands and new music. So that one episode that was sponsored by Havoc Faction, that song was killer. Want to hear more of their stuff. And in that first episode, we talked with Joel. You offhandedly mentioned that Australian band that you love, Silverchair. I think you said they might be your favorite band or one of your favorites. And I'd heard of them, but I haven't really, like, listened to much of their stuff. But, dude, I've been jamming out to Silverchair all week. So thanks for that recommendation. Those guys are killer. So I love learning new stuff like that and getting inspired with new music. You're the man. So because of that, I want to say thank you. Anyway, dude, keep it up. Keep it up with that one time on tour. Just wanted to say, yo, shoot you some love. Peace.
Cause it's going on and on. We'll be driving through the darkest night until the break of dawn. We'll be heading for the cities. Another show for us to play. To get back in the bank tomorrow. We'll do it. We'll do it all again.
Hello and welcome to episode number 16 of That One Time on Tour. As always, I'm your host, Chris Swinney. You guys probably noticed that clip at the beginning of the episode. That's our buddy Marco out in Denver. Marco left us some love on the TOTOT hotline, and he made it onto an episode. So if you guys want to leave us some love, leave us some hate, tell us a tour story, whatever you'd like to do, make sure that you call 1-765-372-8818. That is 1-765-372-8818, and leave us some love or some hate, whatever you want to do. On this week's episode, I sit down with my good friend Adam Glass. Adam used to be in a band called Ripped Away that my first band, Chronic Chaos, played with quite often back in the day. And when those bands kind of ran their course, we started a band called The Widow Jenkins. And actually, Joel Green, ex-member of the band Emery and past guest on this show, was in that band with us. So we talk about all of that, the rise and the fall of the band, the two incarnations of the band. Adam also has a tabletop game company called Lost Age Games. We talk about the successful Kickstarter that kind of got that all going, and they're getting ready to put out a second game very, very soon. So this episode is a lot of fun, and I had a blast sitting down with Adam. We didn't even get on the phone. We got in together in person and both had mics and did it the right way. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. I do want to get a little bit of business out of the way first. I need to tell you about my sponsor, Rockabilia.com. They are your one-stop shop for everything band-related. They have over 500,000 unique items, all officially licensed by the bands. Great quality stuff. You guys need to check out Rockabilia.com. They have everything you could ever imagine as far as bands go. And when you go to checkout at Rockabilia.com, make sure to put in the promo code PCTOTOT to save 15% on your entire order. That is promo code PCTOTOT. So make sure that you are following us on all of the social media platforms at TOTOT Podcast. If you'd like to be a sponsor, make sure that you send me an email to TOTOTPodcast@gmail.com and subscribe on iTunes, rate and review us in the store, and like us on SoundCloud, whatever you want to do. But without further ado, I'm going to jump right into my episode with Mr. Adam Glass from The Widow Jenkins and Lost Age Games. Hey, and I am sitting here with a good friend of mine, Mr. Adam Glass. Adam has played with me in the band The Widow Jenkins. He was also in a great band back in the day called Ripped Away. He runs a gaming company and a lot of other stuff. So, Adam, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, Chris. Great to be here.
I'm very excited to have you. It's nice to have not only a good friend of mine, but you are my step-cousin.
That's right. I'm not sure exactly what the term for it is, but yeah.
I like step-cousin.
Step-cousin, yeah.
Or just cousin.
Cousin, that works, yeah.
So the way that I start these out, and I say this every time, I want to go back in time
in Adam G's life. I want to go all the way back to when you first kind of, you know, realized that music was something that was important to you, and some of the moments that kind of made that switch flip for you.
Okay, let's see. Well, I came from a pretty musical family. A lot of the people in my family were musicians in one way or the other. My grandpa was an opera singer. My uncle Jeff was a pretty accomplished blues musician, still is.
My stepfather.
Yes, your stepfather. you know, and just cousins and just everyone pretty much had some musical aptitude. And I never really thought too much about that when I was a kid, and that really wasn't anything that I planned on getting into. But I think, originally, I'll say, like, how I got into music was through listening to Dr. Demento when I was about 10 years, just young. And I knew nothing about music, obviously. But what that did, and I listened to that for a few years, what that did is it really gave me a good background into a lot of different styles of music. You know, there's a lot of just a lot of novelty songs. So that really gave me a good background in that. And at some point, so of course I was a big Weird Al Yankovic fan when I was a kid, you know.
I watched UHF the other night. I hadn't seen it in so long. It still holds up, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Such
that's a
good
great
movie.
One. Yeah. I still like Weird Al, you know, today. I mean, he's a really great musician, you know, all things considered. But anyway, I remember, a friend of mine in junior high, he had that cassette tape. Everyone had cassette tapes back then of, it was the playoff of the Nirvana album. I can't remember the name of it.
Smells Like Nirvana.
That was the single off of it. But anyway, I wanted to borrow that off of him, and he didn't have it. And he said, "Well, hey, I've got Nevermind here. You could borrow that." I'm like, "Oh, you know, all right, well, you know, Weird Al seemed to like him, so yeah. How bad could it be, you know?" And I got that home, listened to it, and changed my life completely. Nirvana, it was Nirvana from then on out. Well, for, you know, next couple of years anyway. And that's, from that moment on, that's what I realized I wanted to do. I wanted to be in a band. I wanted to be like Kurt Cobain or, you know.
Had you, like, been singing at all, or had you, like, played guitar or anything prior
not,
to that?
Not prior to that. I actually wanted to play bass when I started, and I would listen to Chris Novoselic, his stuff on the Nirvana album, and I thought, hey, that would be cool to do. And
I hear that a lot from people, because I think, I mean, most bass players, they cite Flea, or, mm-hmm. you know, like metal guys talk about Cliff Burton, but the thing that I really like about him is that it was very tasteful, but it was very melodic as well. If you really put on headphones and listen to the stuff on Nevermind or even In Utero, it's different. It's a different style of bass playing. There's a lot of notes in there that maybe other people wouldn't play.
Right, right.
But it's not complicated like the Flea stuff. You know?
Yeah, I mean, he really added a lot to, you know, to the band, and wasn't showy. And I liked it, and that was my intention. You know, I talked to my dad about getting me a bass guitar for my birthday or Christmas one year, and he surprised me with a regular guitar, like an electric guitar, and said, you're not going to learn how to play bass because you can't do anything with the bass. You know, you need to learn how to play. Right? I'm like, oh, whatever. You know, so I played that for a while. But so you know that I was a guitar player for a while in a couple of my bands, but I hit a wall at some point with it.
You well,
know,
let's say it was the Jolly Stompers. Was that the first one?
Yes, that was my first band, and I was the rhythm guitar player in that band, and then
you sang in that band too,
and
correct?
Sang, yes. Okay. And then Ripped Away, I was a guitar player and rhythm guitar, and which was Ripped Away was kind of just a
don't downplay it, man. You guys were great.
Well, I'm just gonna say that was kind of an evolution from the Jolly Stompers, which was my original kind of high school little poppy punk band, into kind of something that's more serious. It's a,
Ripped Away had elements of that pop punk sound, but you guys had like some death metal, you guys had like a lot of crazy stuff, and it was all in one big package, and it sounded great together too.
But yeah, so after that, you know, it was just kind of, you know, stair-stepping from Nirvana. I got into every, you know, all of the punk, the metal, you know, even a little bit of the death metal that you talked about. You know, I liked still a big fan of that. And
I got a lot of, I don't know if you remember this or not, but you gave me, you might not have given it to me. I might have just stolen it from you.
That's possible.
But a Nile shirt that had the sleeves cut off.
Yes.
I might have cut the sleeves off.
You may have cut the sleeves off. I was actually wondering about that, where that shirt ended up.
I still have it.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is when I was in the Ataris, we played in Phoenix at the Warped Tour, and I have a picture wearing that shirt. I wore that short shirt on stage, and I got so many compliments from people on that shirt.
Really?
Like, especially like the crew guys. Like all the crew guys that set the stage up, they're like, "Oh my God, you got a Nile shirt on!" Like they were so excited.
Yeah, you know, they were one of my favorite bands back in the day. And what was great is when we played some club in was it North Carolina or South Carolina?
Oh, are you talking on tour with the Jenkins? I think it was the New Brooklyn Tavern in South Carolina, Columbia.
And wasn't the one the owner of the club or the someone there had managed Nile? Yeah, that was their home venue.
I remember you talking to that guy about that.
Yeah, that was really cool to get to play the same stage that they played. But yeah, I liked it.
Did you ever feel like there was like a distinction between the genres? Because the one thing that when you and I started hanging out a lot, the thing that I liked about you is I was always into punk rock, but I was also into metal. Mm. And a lot of my friends were either or.
Yeah, there was definitely the punk kids and the metal kids didn't hang out with each other.
So. Well, that's why I think you and I hit it off pretty well because we liked both. Like I could go listen to NOFX and then turn around and listen to Nile or Cannibal Corpse or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had an appreciation for many different styles of music, and you know, I tried to include that, you know, in the bands that I was in, you know, these different styles, and sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. You know?
I mean, I love on that on the EP that Ripped Away did that I actually had something to do with Joey and I kind of there and helped you guys record it.
Yeah,
I mean, just how flawlessly you guys went from, you know, like some of the more poppy kind of MXPX type, you know, almost early Blink type sound into blast beats and just like growls. It was the cool. Yeah. I love that record. I still listen to that record. Like,
yeah. And then a few years later, everyone was doing it. You know?
You guys were definitely ahead of your time.
Yeah. That was a great time. I remember that night pretty well, going over there and recording that album. And it was a great, great recording, you know, for us. I think it was probably the best thing that we had recorded.
I just think when I listen to that, it's not the songs, but like the way it's produced, there's a definite, it feels like that time period.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, there were a lot of good bands in that area too. I'm thinking of All Torn Down and, you know, a couple of other guys that, I mean, there's some good musicians.
There was another band. What were they called? Chronic Chaos?
I heard of those guys.
Didn't they steal your guitar player?
Yeah. You know, what's funny about that is back before I really knew you in high school, there was the band at our high school, and that was Chronic Chaos, you know, and I was not in that band, you know, obviously. And I was so jealous. I was like, what, you know, how, all right. My plan was, how do I get in this band? Like, how am I going to get in this band?
If I knew that you wanted in the band, I probably would have pulled some strings.
And well, then, you know, eventually it seemed to me like, well, you know, this isn't going to happen. You know, they're kind of like progressed beyond, like, you know, what I'm going to get to do here. Because you guys, I mean, even back in high school, you were playing out and doing all these.
We were doing sometimes two and three shows a weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you guys were all, you know, in the paper, and, you know, well, you know, you guys are getting ready to hit the big time, whatever. So I'm like, well, fine, I'm just going to have to figure out how to start my own band here, you know, and compete, you know, in a way. And there was a sort of friendly competition between us.
I remember when we started playing shows with Ripped Away with your band, like, I knew all you guys, we all went to the same school, or most of us did.
Yeah.
And I loved what you guys were doing, but I always did feel like, and I'm not saying I was trying to one up you guys, but I always felt like they got that show. Why didn't we get that show, you know?
Well, you know, I'm not sure how much like direct interaction we had with each other at that point. I mean, we shared a few classes and, you know, different things, but there was a point we were playing a show at some community center in Jonesboro, and we had Isaac with us, and he was, you know, this was his early days of learning how to be a good manager. And, and he had this idea, let's make a poster or, a, you know, a flyer for this show. And, well, let me first say that everywhere there was a Chronic Chaos flyer for a Chronic Chaos show. At every, you know,
there were stickers all over the high school.
there was a, you know, a flyer for Chronic Chaos. And, so we had, we made this flyer with Fabio on the front.
I remember this.
And it said, "I can't believe it's not Chronic Chaos." And, you know, we had ripped away and there, you know, whatever.
And I remember some of the guys in my band kind of took offense to it, but I thought it was hilarious.
We didn't mean any, you know, disrespect or anything. We just thought it was kind of funny and it, you know, but I mean, I can see how in the, you know, that might piss somebody off, but you know,
I thought it was great.
We didn't want to hurt. Going back to that, there was some point I remember when we were both of our bands were getting pretty big in the local scene.
Yeah.
When one of us, it might have been me, it might have been you, kind of reached out to the other band and you know, let's have a truce, let's have an alliance together, you know. And
yeah.
And then
I think things got better after that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I remember you guys coming over to my apartment at the time, and then we started working together, you know, to get that venue that we were playing at, the Rain Tree.
It definitely things got better when we joined forces.
Yes, definitely. And yeah,
and I think
a lot of stories probably from those days.
I've talked to a lot of people from different scenes and different bands, you know, and I think that's a common thread. There's always kind of those two or three bands that kind of rise to the top of the scene. Mm. And then even if it's not a complete, you know, civil war of the scene, it does seem like there's a little bit of competition. And I think sometimes it's healthy competition.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I know that you guys, you know, whatever your, you know, interpretation of us was, when you guys started doing stuff and we realized, oh, we're not the only guys around anymore that do stuff, it pushed us to do more. And I think it kind of vice versa pushed you guys to do more as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, you know, my guitarist and myself, we helped you guys record that EP and we played shows together all the time. And it just kind of became this big incestual thing where both bands just hung out all the time and played.
I'd probably use a different word, but,
you know, it was trying to use my whole vocabulary that I've got.
But it was a really great time, and you know, it kind of seemed inevitable that all of us would get together and you know, do something musical together, you know, as a result of that.
So let's take it then to the next kind of step in the progression was when Chronic Chaos sort of broke up, and I know that Ripped Away was, you guys were still doing some stuff. Aaron had joined our band, and I don't know if it was completely over or not, but then the next step was the Widow Jenkins, which is you and I sort of started that. Tell me your thoughts or your memories on how that all came to be.
Well, I remember between times.
Because there were two, like, kind of versions of that band.
Yeah, there were two incarnations of the Widow Jenkins, and the like the 2003 version and then the 2007 version. So in between times, between Ripped Away and the Widow Jenkins, I tried to get several projects up and going with different people, and just nothing really worked out. I had Brian, who eventually became the bass player for the Widow Jenkins. I did a few things with him, you know, just, you know, a few other guys here and there.
And if my listeners don't know, he's speaking of Brian Nelson, who then went on to be in the Ataris with me. And now he is, I think, front of house for Baroness. So he's doing really well.
I worked with Brian quite a bit. I know we at least practiced several times and it was with, some of our older members, but at some point, I can't really remember exactly what happened, but whatever the lingering remains of that band was, just it stopped.
Brian moved to Florida to go to recording school.
Yeah, that might have been it. And then I kind of lost touch with everybody who was in Ripped Away. I think at least one guy moved out of state. I think the other guy moved far, maybe into Indianapolis. I'm not really sure. I can't really remember exactly. It's been a long time. But, I was kind of, you know, a man without a band at that point, and we started hanging out more often and really started to...
And my band wasn't over at that point. We had taken... this is a crazy story. Like, Jason and Troy, they were brothers.
Right.
The drummer and the singer bass player for Chronic Chaos. Mm. They had a company they'd started where they were doing construction and burying like cable for Comcast and all this stuff. Mm. And we were at the height that we'd ever been. We just got off Warped Tour. We were selling all kinds of CDs. Like, things were really kind of hitting. We thought it was going to take off to the next level. And they hit me with, hey, we want to take a year off and try to do our company. Mm. So we just went on hiatus. And yeah. During the hiatus, I was like, this sucks. I'm going to play music. I don't own a company. Like, this is my life.
Right.
And I think that's when we started chatting or sending ideas back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked off and on since we both liked metal, and apparently we're the only two people in the world who did.
Who liked both.
Yeah, who liked metal and, you know, and punk. That we would do some kind of a side project together at some point.
I was always itching to get you to sing on my songs that I was
writing. Yeah. I think that eventually just that when that happened with Chronic Chaos, and you know, that really kind of came to the forefront. You're like, you know, we're gonna hit it. Now we're gonna go and do this.
And in the meantime, I had found a drummer,
right?
Brandon Beaver, who went on to play in Ariari and a bunch of other bands. And he was actually living at my apartment.
Is he still playing music?
I believe he is. I'm not sure where he's at. And I think he's in Indy. I'm not sure what band he's in now, but yeah, he's, pretty much consistently kept drumming since all this happened. So,
Yeah, that's good. Found a good drummer.
Didn't have a full-time bass player because Brian was in Florida. So our friend Daniel filled in. And I would bitch at him nonstop because he wouldn't buy a bass amp.
Those were some stressful times, equally great and stressful, I remember. But
practicing at your grandma's house before I had to go to work at the gas station.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Aaron, you know, was in, came back in,
yeah.
and that was great. And you know, speaking of him, if I would have gotten a bass originally. I think it would have been perfect for us.
Because he was already playing guitar.
He was playing guitar. He's a great guitar. I'm not sure if he still plays. I'm sure he didn't lose his amazing ability at it.
Yeah.
But, we could have, things might have been easier for us when we were originally starting out if I would have just played bass originally and he played guitar and everything would have been fine. But anyway, yeah. Aaron got in and then we, started the fun work of writing songs and practicing every single night. And I would drive from the Marion, which is, you know, about 30 miles away from Muncie. Every night I get off work and I drive over to Muncie and we'd start our band practice at about midnight every night with acoustic instruments.
And then after a while, we had everything in the living room of Aaron and I's apartment, and we would jam in there because it was by the campus, so nobody really cared how loud we were.
Right, yeah. And it was a great time.
We wrote some good songs.
We did.
I don't know if you remember this exactly, but I just had this light bulb go off. I remember kind of the catalyst, at least for me. I don't think we'd done anything yet. Brian was going to Full Sail University down in Winter Park, Florida for recording. Right. I went down there to visit him after Chronic Chaos kind of ended, and we'd already been discussing doing something. Mm-hmm. And he was at school one day, and he had an acoustic guitar that was in tune in drop D, and I had never played in drop D. Mm-hmm. And I sat there, and after about an hour or two, I'd written the majority of My Israel.
Oh.
And when I came back, I think I showed you, like, check this song out. I've never written a song in drop D tuning before. And I don't remember exactly what happened after that, but
I'd never screamed that like that in any of the music that I'd done. I mean, that was, it kind of had a sort of like Poison the Well kind of vibe to it, with the melodic singing, but I'd never really did that, and that was kind of different really for the time. Yeah. There are a lot of bands doing it, obviously, like Zayo, and
like with our influences, even though that was kind of the next big thing, I think we hit it kind of early.
Yeah, we did, and a lot of people didn't really understand what we were doing. I remember that
there were no breakdowns.
Yeah, we didn't have breakdowns
because I was a thrash guy.
Yeah,
I remember the kids like at the shows would be like, "Dude, you guys are so good, but I want a breakdown so I can mosh."
There was a weird, like, we played a show at some point, and I remember there were these kids that had lined up, and they were all in like workout gear. They were like in like sweatpants, yeah. and you know, and they were staying there getting doing stretches, and they you know, they were getting ready to start their calisthenics exercise, you know, to our music. I'm like, what, you know, what is going on here, you know?
Because we were playing with hardcore bands.
Yeah, we played with a lot of hardcore bands.
We didn't fit with the punk bands really anymore, and yeah. So the only other thing in the metal bands, we weren't really a metal band. So it was with this weird in between thing.
Yeah, it was a conscious decision to not really do breakdowns.
I mean,
I remember we wanted to like I think not knocking any bands to do that. Okay, I love I love breakdowns, I love djent, I love all that stuff. But that just wasn't what we wanted to do, and we wanted to kind of just focus on like a more traditional. We didn't want to. We felt if we did it, we would just be
copying.
Gimmicky.
Yeah.
If we did it, we'd be copying.
Well, I remember. I mean, I remember. The majority of the guitar stuff, sans a couple songs where you wrote some stuff. I've never written a breakdown in my life. And there's one song, I don't know if you remember, I don't even know if it has a name or not. Window in the Door.
Yeah. Yeah.
That has a breakdown.
Yeah. I don't think we ever actually, that one never really got,
that one never got played live. Yeah. That was just a demo. And I think one of the reasons I never really wanted to, I mean, I love that song, but one of the reasons I never really did much with it was because it had a breakdown. I felt it was weird. You said it was a conscious effort for me writing songs. It was subconscious. But then when someone would say, "Oh, hey, why are there no breakdowns?" Then it became conscious. Cause I'm like, well, I'm not going to do that then if that's what you want.
I didn't think the lyrics for that song were very good either. So we just kind of,
there's some really good parts in that song, but it was kind of just a sketch pad song. Yeah,
right.
But so we're in the Widow Jenkins, that first incarnation of the band. What I don't even really remember exactly what happened.
I have my Spinal Tap story.
Okay, yeah, let's do that.
And this involves you, which with the Widow Jenkins. There may have been others, but this is one that I remember. We were playing some bar here in town, and we hadn't practiced for quite a while, and we were really just out of our game, or what.
And we were normally very tight.
Yeah, we just been kind of lazing along, and then we were gonna play the show, and we didn't really get any practice in that week, so it was kind of a sloppy show. And I remember we were playing, and maybe one or two of us had something to drink. I don't know. We didn't drink.
Yeah,
really. I don't think ever.
I've never been a drinker.
We were not. We smoked cigarettes. I think that was our vice.
That's, none of us even smoked weed.
Yeah, we didn't do it. Yeah, we were basically straight edge, except we smoked cigarettes.
And drank soda.
And weren't straight edge.
Yeah.
So
we were bevel edge.
Yeah, there you go. But anyway, yeah, we got up there, we were playing, and I remember, trying to get into it, and in those days, it was fashionable to wear a chain wallet.
I always had one.
And this particular chain wallet that I had a hook for some reason. I don't know why it was there at the top of the chain. And
there's a picture for this.
Are you starting to remember this now?
I am now.
And we were playing or whatever, and you're doing our thing, and I remember kind of like leaning in to do some sort of rock pose or whatever.
And I was soloing or something.
Yeah, and you flipped your guitar up just as I came up there, and then I tried to move away to get, and like, oh no, I am hooked.
We were connected
to Chris's guitar somehow.
On the E string, high E string.
Oh my gosh! I'm like, what are we gonna do now?
I think we finished the song.
I remember. I just didn't know what to do. I think I just pulled off and it threw your entire guitar out of tune.
Yeah, it was bad.
it was just terrible. That was like
that was one of my least favorite shows I've ever played.
Show.
And there wasn't a lot of people there because it was kind of a last minute thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was.
But yeah, that's my Spinal Tap story of getting stuck, and then somebody fortunately managed to get a picture of it when we're
exactly when it happened.
So when we're stuck there, so maybe you can find that.
I think I've got it somewhere on a hard drive.
Yeah, there's that. I'm sure I could think of some other things.
What exactly, I mean, my memory is very fuzzy because there's two incarnations. I know kind of how the second incarnation ended, but that first incarnation, what kind of killed it? Do you remember what killed the band? Because we stopped and then you started doing Ishtari.
Yeah.
And some other stuff.
I think what happened was it was just...
I remember there was some big
there was a lot issue. It was a lot of stress. I think a lot of stuff happened really quickly, and I think we were pushing really hard.
Well, and I'll take the blame for a lot of that, because now here's the one thing I'll say, and I'm not trying to cut you off,
but sure.
Now it's coming back. Chronic Chaos was on this trajectory.
Right.
And when that band kind of, hey, it's hiatus time, I guess in my mind, because I've always been this kind of push through everything. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm kind of a dick. You got to tell me, I mean, you know, we've been in some arguments before.
We've had our moments, yes.
But, and I think my whole thing was, oh, I have this new band. The songs are really good. I'm just going to pick up where Chronic Chaos left off.
We are going to be right at that same point.
There's
going to
be no build up. It's going to be right where we were at.
Yeah, I mean, we had, you know, it was practice every night.
It was regimented.
Yeah, I mean, it was really, we referred to it a lot of the time, you know, everyone, you included, you know, we referred to it as a boot camp. It was a boot camp to, you know, and I think that
we were recording demos weekly, yeah, just like
playing shows.
I remember being at a practice. And we had nothing to record. And I was like, you guys go to the store, get something to drink. When you come back, I'll have a song. And that's one of my favorite songs we did.
What one was that?
Eulogy for a Foe.
Oh, yeah. That was great. Yeah, but I mean, that was just... I wouldn't say it was your fault, in that sense. I mean, it's just the stress of... Yeah. We all wanted to be there. You know, we all wanted to
be... I pushed pretty hard, though.
We all wanted to be at that point. And, well, yeah, I mean... And yeah, that just happens, you know, and then...
We were young.
It was a different time.
Yeah.
You know, lessons learned, and now we're, you know, we know not to do that next time, but...
So when that incarnation ended, let's say, what was it, 04?
Yeah.
Maybe almost 05, something like that?
We had a lot of interest, and a lot of stuff was happening for us, and then it just like, kind of just like...
Victory was interested. A couple other labels had shown interest. Velvet Hammer,
a bunch. I seem to remember Fearless might have been involved in something.
Fearless had gotten back to me because I had also done some stuff with Brazil prior to that, mm-hmm. and then after that, and they loved the demos. They didn't really say, hey, yeah, I want to sign you guys, but they were like interested.
Yeah.
So when it all kind of everybody in the band decided, I wish I remembered that day. I remember like you were kind of stressed out, didn't really want to do a show we had that night.
I don't remember any of that. I do all I remember.
Well, but it wasn't
is...
just you because I said, well, we have a show, it's booked, and then I remember Aaron and Brian both said, well, we don't want to do it either. I'm like, and then it was just over. It wasn't like a horrible night. It was just
I don't really remember the day that the band broke up. I don't seem to remember the band ever breaking up.
Well, it wasn't like it wasn't like an official breakup.
Yeah, it's just kind of stopped.
In my mind, what I remember was that we were at the apartment on Wheeling here in Muncie. Yeah. We had a show that night. It was either the Emerson or the Melody Inn or Be Here Now or one of these places. Yeah. And we were all there. We were getting ready to go. My dad was actually there on his motorcycle.
Oh.
And that's the only reason I remember this. And I remember, like, we had this little meeting where we were getting ready to load up and go. And you said, I don't really think I want to play it.
I have no memory of that, man.
And I got really upset. And I wasn't, like, mean, but I was like, dude, what's going on?
Are you sure it was me that said that?
I think I'm not sure. Maybe Aaron or someone said it, and then you agreed. You might not have said it first, because that's the thing. It's so cloudy in my head.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
But I remember that we didn't play the show that night, and then I don't think any of us spoke to each other for a while, and the band just kind of never did anything again.
Mm.
It was just kind of over.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while. I can't remember. But yeah, I guess that's how it was.
So after that, did you end up moving to Indy after that?
Yeah, I think I kicked around for about a year and, you know, a few months anyway. And then I ended up getting involved with some other guys down in Indy. And that was a long multifaceted situation. I don't even know like how to really go into all that.
I just remember that was Ishtari, right?
Yeah, Ishtari. And
I remember that the CD that you gave me of the stuff you guys did, it was awesome.
I mean, unbelievable musicians. You know, they were absolutely unbelievable musicians. And that wasn't really what was the downfall of that band. But
was it less of a boot camp? Did you feel a little more comfortable? Drill Sergeant Swiss wasn't there.
No, I mean, for the longest time we didn't have a band. It was really just me and the guitar player, and we wrote all the material, and then the band kind of formed around that.
Yeah,
I don't want to sound cheesy, but it's one of those artistic differences, sort of irreconcilable differences, sort of situations between us, and we just I kind of went away from it. A lot of good things came out of going to Indianapolis, though. That's where I met my future wife. That whole time period when I was writing that music down, it was some of the best stuff I'd written.
I loved it
lyrically. You know, I mean, I'd really hit a new level. You know, that was a lot better than anything I'd ever done before.
Yeah.
I didn't think I was capable of a lot of it. I don't know why, if I just had the time or the space or what, but yeah, that, so there's some good things that came of it, but I don't really want to move back to Indy anytime soon. You know what I mean? So
do you remember then, well, I guess we'll get into the second incarnation. I had written a song and I was going to start a band called 21 Guns. And this is way before the Green Day song, 21 Guns.
Right. I remember that.
And we tried out like four or five singers and nobody was just, I mean, and I know I'm going to stroke your ego a little bit. Once I was in a band with you, then I'd get these guys in here. Oh, I can sing. And I'm like, motherfucker, you can't sing. You know, and if anybody out there is one of the guys that tried out, hey, sorry.
No comment for me. You know,
you have a very unique voice. Like, plus it's a baritone, and right. There's not a lot of guys doing the stuff you were doing that aren't, you know, tenors. Like it has a very unique tone to it. And plus you go in and out of the screams and the growls and everything. So we had these guys trying out for this new song that I'd written for Brian and I were going to start this new project.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work. So I don't know like what you were doing at the time, but I remember I emailed you the track with no vocals, just an MP3. And literally a day or two later, you sent it back with vocals and I almost shit my pants. Like, it was like, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like the Widow Jenkins, but it's better than the Widow Jenkins. It was different. There were so many layers to the harmonies and weird, like you'd always do these little things that were like little percussive things that were kind of hidden and they pan out, and I don't know. You have a great mind for producing vocals.
Well, thank you.
So what was that whole, like, you got that email from me and I know like we hadn't talked for a long time. I was like, shit, man, if I can't find a singer, I'm just sending this to the guy I know can do it.
Yeah. Well, I,
cause you were in Ishtari at that point.
I was kind of on my way out of it, I think. And I didn't have any intention after I left that band to ever be in a band again.
Yeah.
I'd had such a bad experience with it that I was done. I didn't want to play music anymore, but I'll get back to that in a second.
Is that when you burnt your guitar at the tree?
No, that was, we won't talk about that. Okay, that's a very,
that'll be a bonus episode for my fan club. I'm getting ready to start.
Oh my gosh. I snapped it in two, Chris. Okay. Right? I didn't burn it.
It's funny how your memories change, because in my head, I'm like seeing you.
I think
like,
I would burn the guitar.
I'm seeing you do like Jimi Hendrix
thing.
It was like
that episode, that Tenacious D episode, the Sasquatch episode.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know what I'm talking about? Where Jack Black's like, shh, be very quiet, and he snaps the guitar. You know. Anyway, that was a weird thing. But anyway, where was I?
I sent you the MP3. You're sort of on your way out.
Yeah, I was on my way out of music.
Yeah,
you know, I didn't want to really play music anymore. And I'm like, well, you know, they sent me this. This was a lot different from what I'd been doing. It was almost, and you'll know this from playing in many different bands, that every band has their own unique feel.
Yeah.
Apart from the sound of the music, there's just a kind of a, I don't know, a spiritual vibe or something to the music that's even with the way it's recorded, the way the guys are able to record the music and play the music. It's just real. And there was a very distinct vibe for the Widow Jenkins that was, you know, like reminiscent of you know, like hardcore DIY, you know, that on that side. And then the band
I used to feel like the bands that we'd play with, like maybe you've got this slick, amazing record and you've got your hair all done up nice and everything.
Yeah.
We'll kick your fucking ass. Like, put us on the stage with you and you're gone. That's how I always felt about it. I always felt like us against the world.
Right.
And that DIY thing was definitely there.
Yeah. But the other band that I was in at the time had it was a much different vibe. And I was very entrenched, obviously, in that music and that vibe and kind of writing to that style.
You guys were like concept oriented.
Yeah, I mean, it was very experimental stuff. Yeah. I would probably just call it experimental metal. That's really what we played. You know, all kinds of psychological horror punk, you know, like what do you want to call it? But anyway, that was like that vibe was there, that Widow Jenkins vibe, you know, and I'm like, you know, that's kind of stirring up some stuff in me, you know, I'm going to play that. And so I went ahead and what I did is I kind of wrote a sequel to My Israel with the lyrics of the song.
I love that, man.
And it was basically just kind of, it's really just a sequel. And so I like that song a lot. That's kind of, you know.
Sincerity in the Damned, right?
Yeah, Sincerity in the Damned. And it came out really quickly. I'd used, you know, a lot of the stuff that I'd learned in songwriting, you know, I learned a few things about recording and, you know, and, I think it turned out really well and pretty proud of it.
I mean, I just remember I was actually with Brian. Mm. I think Aaron might've been there as well. And you sent it back and we listened to it together. And I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever heard. I mean, it just,
dang.
I never met anybody before. And like, this is no downplay into Chronic Chaos or any of the bands I've been in where I've written songs, but for some reason, when I would write a song and then you would put your stamp on it, it just felt complete. It felt like a period at the end of the song.
Right.
And I hadn't had that with a lot of, and maybe it's because, you know, I always put so much time and effort into what I was trying to create musically, and you do the same thing. And I just always felt like we were a good team.
Yeah.
For the stuff that we do. And I'm still proud to this day. Like, I let people hear My Israel. I let people hear Sincerity in the Damned all the time. And there's a Bandcamp page. I tell people to download it for free all the time.
It's a strange thing about that song, about My Israel. This is, you know, God's honest truth. Every 3 or 4 years, someone discovers that song.
It's on iTunes.
Is it?
Yeah.
And I think it's on Spotify.
It's on Spotify as well. There was a... well, here, let me tell this story really quick, and because I don't think I've ever told you this. So a couple years ago, I was living in Alabama, and my computer crashed.
Hmm.
And I couldn't find any CD copies of the stuff we had done, and I really wanted My Israel because I always had it on my iPod, and I just... it's. Even though, you know, we wrote it, I love that song, and I've always just been, I mean, that's my song, you know?
Right.
And I was like, crap, I can't find it. And then I went, well, okay, I know it's on Bandcamp because I put it up there a couple years ago. So I'll just download it off Bandcamp. But when I couldn't remember the actual Bandcamp address, so I Googled the Widow Jenkins, and I found out that we were on a compilation from a German record label, and the name of the compilation is called The Cost of Freedom, and it's got like this black and white U.S. flag on fire. And I don't remember ever speaking to these people, but our song is on there, and it had an iTunes link.
Huh.
So I went to iTunes, and that compilation that was released in like 2014, we recorded that song in 2003.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of what I was going to say. Like every 2 or 3 years, it seems like someone would contact me or... you know, that song would get rediscovered and someone would be very excited to...
I've had people email me and go like, are you guys touring? What's going on? Like, the band's been done for so long.
Well, yeah. I mean, my brother, who lives in Canada, I hadn't talked to him in years. You know, we just kind of, you know, drifted apart.
He was in Europe for a long time.
Yeah,
too,
was. Yeah, he was in Europe, and he was, you know, hard to get a hold of. That's a whole other story. But he called me out of nowhere one morning, and I, you know, normally I don't answer strange numbers like that, you know, yes. Let's see, you know, Canada's calling me or whatever, you know, you got to pick up the phone, you know, when Canada's calling. And he was like, hey, man, you know, he had the Canadian, you know, accent going on. And like, who is this? You know, so this is your brother. And I'm like, no, I cannot. What? He's like, yeah, I lost my accent. I'm like, I'm not so sure you did, you know. I think
you might have gained
you might have found one. But, you know, no, nothing against the Canadian. I love Canadians. Some of our biggest supporters have been Canadians. I love Canadians to death. But he said that he was working somewhere. He had his own business, and that song was on some random playlist or something that he had. And someone heard it. So the owner of this place that he was cleaning and was apparently involved in the music business in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And he wanted me to come up and put on a showcase or start a band or do something. You know, it's like a weird phone call to get, you know. And this was like this would have been like 2013. You know,
it could have been when that went up, because yeah. I mean, that's how it got on. I mean, when that band died, I didn't put it on. I just put it on Bandcamp because I knew people wanted it.
Right.
But yeah, it somehow, and I'm pretty sure that company in Germany got it off Bandcamp, never asked me, but I'm happy it's on iTunes.
Yeah. So, I mean, just things like weird things. Like, I'm like, well, dude, you know, I can't go. I go up to Canada and, you know, record. It was kind of like a strange, you know, difficult request anyway, even if I was still into it. But, you know, I was like a brand new father at the time, yeah. And, you know, all that. And I'm like, I'd have to get a hold of the guys and, you know, all this other stuff. See, but anyway, yeah, that, and then several other just, you know, things like that would always happen where someone would usually meet me for the first time. I'd tell them I was in a band and they'd be like, roll their eyes or whatever. Yeah, whatever. You know. And so is everybody. And then, you know, they would play that song at some point. They'd find it, and then they'd come, oh, you're, you know, you did that? And I was like, yeah, you know. What'd you think? I was, you know, not, you know, I was making up that I was in a band? Or
I've gotten many emails in the last, because my email address is on the Bandcamp, and I've gotten probably 20 to 30 emails in the last 4 years from Japan. So I guess that song's made the rounds over there pretty heavily.
Right, and yeah, and the point is, you know, it just seems like there's something about that song that really resonated with people.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really my point, you know, not like to disparage anyone for being excited about, you know, a song that I wrote or you know, pat me on the back, I'm awesome because I wrote this amazing song or, you know, not at all. It's just a very, I don't even know what the word would be. It's almost like it's like a classic hit.
That nobody something. Knows,
like a one-hit wonder song from back in the day that no one has heard.
Well, do you remember when we did record it? We got airplay on X103. We got airplay on the Bear up in Fort Wayne.
I remember the Bear. I don't remember X103.
X103 played it like 3 or 4 times because I had a buddy that was working there and he kind of snuck it in.
Huh, that's cool. You know, I don't remember that. I remember, you know, going up to the Bear for an interview.
They still play it. Cool. They still play it on the Ball State station.
Do they?
One of my students last year actually was a guy that worked at the radio station, and the first time he came in for lessons, we started discussing everything, and he's like, "Wait, you're in the Widow Jenkins?" He goes, "That song plays like 4 or 5 times every couple of days."
Oh, wow!
I'm not sure why it still plays.
That's pretty good for a 15-year-old song. You know, that nobody really remembers anything else about it. You know, that's cool.
When I show people that song, they dig it. So I mean, I think. I do think that band, given a little bit more maybe nurturing,
yeah.
something bigger could have happened.
Yeah, I think it could have.
Because then that second incarnation, I mean, you get the song, you like it. I talk you into joining. We throw away 21 Guns and decide to just be the Widow Jenkins. Mm-hmm. Joel Green from Emory moves from South Carolina to Indiana to be the third guitarist because I always wanted to be like Iron Maiden and have 3 guitars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we just started gigging, and I feel like the vibe and the stress levels were different for that second incarnation, even though we did, you know, we toured a little bit and we did stuff here and there. But I think that all kind of ended almost in the same way. It just kind of ran its course a little bit, right?
Yeah, I couldn't keep up with the pace anymore of being in a a real band.
Yeah.
You know.
We played some big shows. We played with Ace Today. We played so many big shows.
There's so much that was going on in my life, and I just couldn't keep up with it anymore. It seemed like a lot of good things, though, happened for you guys after that, you know. So
it was a gateway into Brian and Jake and I joining the Ataris. It just kind of, because we had done such, you know, what I thought at the time was I was proud of the work that we had done. Mm. And a lot of the people that had heard that work, even if the band wasn't still around, they kind of respected me a little bit more and kind of gave me more of a shot because of the stuff that we'd done. Because,
right.
I mean, in any other circumstances, the Widow Jenkins would have been the biggest band in the world, I think. But it just wasn't meant to be. But yeah, it opened doors for other things. But I still look back on that band as probably the top. I mean, I know Pride is kind of a scary thing, but I'm very, very proud of what we did in that band. I'm almost more proud. I mean, my Israel's great, but the demos that we did kind of when the band was ending, with the fake drums.
Yeah.
I thought that the progression we were going to, where we were really mixing a lot of the different genres together.
I definitely regret that. I don't know if regret's the right word. I'm disappointed that we didn't get a shot at a serious professional
full length or EP or something.
Yeah. For some of those songs, because a lot of the songs, the Widow Jenkins, that's a story, or not the Widow Jenkins, My Israel, is a story in itself about how many times that song was mixed down and remixed. And I seem to remember Tyler from Margo
and the Nuclear So-and-Sos,
he would want to borrow your amp.
You wanted to borrow my amp?
Borrow your half stack.
So every time I would be like, well, let's remix and master.
Then he would be like, hey, you know, well, I'm going to go and do some more stuff to this, so can I borrow, you know? And then I remember going down and recording new vocals. I mean, you have this really nice, on that song, these really nice layered...
Layered harmonies,
everything, you know, it sounded really nice.
Replaced some of the drum tones and mixed and matched and like... That song,
yeah, I mean, it had a really high quality record, you know.
That song's probably got mastering. As much work in it as most people's full lengths.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I regret, or, you know, disappointed or whatever, that we never got to have the rest of our songs have that treatment. And they have, you know, the, like, a fake drums and, yeah. You know, just, you know, me and you kind of messing around on...
Those are some of my fondest memories writing songs.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You and I, you know, with, you know, a big gulp Mountain Dew to keep me awake, just chilling in your house until like 3 or 4 in the morning writing songs and looping drums.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, great times, man. I loved it. I love doing that. Yeah, good stuff.
And I still to this day, like I was on the band camp last night in preparation for talking to you, and it had been years since I've heard a couple of those songs, and I mean, I'm not tooting our own horn or anything, but they still hold up. Like, to me, like, I listen to them, like, wow, those could have been amazing songs if we would have actually taken them to a studio and did the right thing, you know?
Right, yeah.
So the Widow Jenkins kind of died out. That's when Brian and Jake and I joined the Ataris. Mm. So after that, did you do anything musically after that?
No.
Just kind of gave up on music for a while?
Dude, I was in it. From, you know, the age of 15, you know, I was either in a band, getting ready to join a band, or getting ready to leave a band from the time I was 15 until 30. So, I was kind of exhausted, and I needed to see if there was anything else, you know, worth doing in life, you know. So that's, you know, really, that was... And, you know, that's not entirely true, because I did kind of play around with my friend Jason. We had a sort of a kind of a bedroom recording band that we did, and that was kind of like a horror punk little thing called Night Gaunt. And, you know, we'd kind of mess around with that every once in a while, but there wasn't any, like, it wasn't really serious or anything like that. You know, it wasn't there were no shows to be played or, you know, anything like that. So, yeah, I mean, but then... You know, recently I've been kind of slowly kind of creeping back into it. You know, now the kids are a little bit older. Well, one of them is, and we recorded a song for where we go to church. There's a talent show and me and my wife recorded a just like a vocal harmony thing for their talent show, and that ended up, you know, coming, it's like turning out really well, and it kind of reminded me of like what it used to, I mean, it was like kind of sort of went viral, not, you know, like in the, you know,
yeah,
a few hundred plays, you know, around, you know, for anybody who would be interested in that. But that kind of reminded me a little bit of what it was like to play music, and like, I hadn't really recorded anything in at least 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's I recently got a 7-string guitar and a 5-string bass.
Cool.
And, you know,
well, that's one upping me on strings.
That 7-string guitar, man, where have you been all my life, 7-string guitar?
You know,
it's like the top six, the six strings, you know, for the, like the regular.
And then you've got a low B string.
You know, then I dropped that down to, down a step to what, I don't know what the tuning is. Is it drop A?
It would probably be A if you're going down a full step. Yeah.
But you know, so you can play with kind of like in the drop tuning on the lower string, and then you can do all the genty stuff, and you know, and then
of there's course, an 8-string guitar.
Yeah. I've seen them
here. No, at the store.
Oh, here. There's one here.
I tried playing it, and I'm so old school. Like I even tried the 7 and I just don't get
it. You don't like the 7? I love the 7.
I love the 7, but it messes with my mind when I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to play a B. Oh, it's just open. Like, I just...
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so used to having
I mean, you know how I play with a lot of intervals when I would play a lot of, you know, like just the...
Major,
the,
minor, thirds,
yeah, stuff like that. And that lends itself really well to that playing, to my playing style, yeah. So...
That's cool. Yeah.
Plus, I love the, like, the low tunings.
And plus, I mean, Korn's your most... The band you love the most.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Korn was it. You know that. No.
I actually, this is funny. My last guest, Dewey Halpas, used to be in a band called Anatomy of a Ghost. He played with Portugal the Man. He has a podcast called Peer Pleasure Podcast.
Uh-huh.
And he just had a couple, like a month or two ago, he had Head from Korn
was his
guest. And I never knew this, but Head like lives in Noblesville.
Does he?
Yeah, he's got like, I guess his daughter's mother, like her family's from Indiana.
You're right.
So like maybe we'll run into Head someday.
Maybe we will. I never you know, never got into Korn. I mean, like I appreciated them and everything, but back when they were blowing up and all that.
I like their first record. I thought it was kind of new and interesting, and then everybody kind of started going that route, and I kind of lost interest.
So.
But he seemed really cool on the episode, though. I'd like to hang out with him.
Yeah.
I tell people all the time, it's like, man, I'm not a fan of Kid Rock, but I would totally chill with the dude.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure it would be fun.
All right.
So, okay, so the band's over. You kind of drift away from music.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a thing that I'm really excited about, and we can jump forward now, we're almost to an hour, but I'm going to, you know, you're my buddy. We're going to go a little long with this.
Okay.
So you're doing this gaming thing. Can you explain to me how that started and the success you've had? Because I know it's been fairly successful so far.
Yeah. I'm a nerd. Surprise. You know, you know, I played Dungeons and Dragons and, you know, Magic the Gathering back when I was, you know, a kid. And might still do it maybe sometimes. And I love that. And there's been this... resurgence of gaming all these 40-year-old dudes realize they can't go out and do anything anymore. There's just kind of been this rebirth, and we're in the golden age of these games, and they're really sophisticated now, and a lot more. It's not just Monopoly, you know. They're really they've come a long way, but you know,
let's tell people this that are listening. When I say gaming, I probably use the wrong term. We're talking like board games.
Yeah, tabletop games.
Tabletop
games is a proper term. Probably the biggest one that everyone would know would be Cards Against Humanity is considered tabletop. I mean, like in that kind of genre. But anyway, let's see. When I moved back here from Bloomington. I started spending a lot of time with my friends of more of the nerd persuasion, you know, less of the musical people that I was hanging out with, and I'm sure there's a lot of crossover there, but
overlap,
a lot of overlap between the gaming geeks and the music geeks, but But you know, I was getting into that, and I was seeing how far things had come, and then Kickstarter. You know, Kickstarter had it had been out for a while, but we started to see how these companies were using Kickstarter to launch a game, launch a record, you know. And I thought, hey, you know, we could do this. Let's work at it. Let's do it. And we did. And we beat the odds with, you know, there's something like a 30% success rate for first-time projects. And we beat the odds with our game. We were up against a lot of really big games that had come out, that were kickstarting at the same time. There's like a really popular, controversial game called Kingdom Death Monster that we inadvertently had, you know, something like, I can't remember how many millions they made, but I mean, it was sucking every, you know, all of the backers up, and we kind of snuck in somewhere in there, you know, while that was going on. And we had a success with that, and then just kind of slowly I began, you know, just kind of working off of that, just kind of stair step and go further. We're releasing our, well, not releasing, but we're going to begin promotion of our new game.
What's the first game called?
The first game's called Life and Legend.
Life and Legend.
Yes, and it's a card game. And it's really a kind of a, the idea of like adventure games and role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons. We tried to really boil all of this stuff down and condense it down into like a smaller card game. And, but it's still pretty complex. And, but that was our first game, and it had a lot of success, a lot of diehard fans, a lot of people like it. And I noticed there's so many similarities. I think I was talking to you about this earlier between the gaming industry and the DIY industry and the music, yeah. The music industry and the DIY, you know, kind of spirit is there. And a lot of the lessons that I learned from music and, you know, booking your own tour.
You can extrapolate the stuff you learned, you know, and use it with the game.
It's very, very similar.
Yeah.
It's almost the exact same thing, other than there's just not music. It's just it's just a different product.
I feel the same way about the podcasting
thing. Yeah, yeah, it's really strange. So, I mean, that was a big preparation for me to be able to do that, and it's turned out to be more lucrative for me than the music has been. And, I like it, and, you know, I like, you know, we were also talking about doing creative things and, you know, keeping yourself going and with that, and it's a really good creative outlet for me, and I actually kind of enjoy being a publisher in that sense, you know. When really, Lost Age Games, that's the company, and it's kind of almost like a vanity label. It's almost like my Epitaph,
yeah,
or my Fat Records, or you know, whatever. But I, for now, you know, but just like Epitaph, or you know, I want to add, you know, like how I want that to grow. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so yeah, we're on track for that, and hopefully it'll keep growing.
So with the you know, with getting ready to produce the second game, is it going to be another crowdfunding experience?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And you've probably got enough backers that really enjoyed the first one that you'll probably be able to, you know, you'll know this time it'll be funded.
Right. Yeah. It's and what we're producing this time isn't going to be as expensive. It won't be as big of a financial burden, because we basically broke even with our first game. And we made a little bit off of it, but all of the money comes after the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's really just a Kickstarter. You know, you're just kickstarting something. And I think a lot of people are kind of confusing it now with the pre-order system.
Yeah.
They're expecting everything to be finished, everything to be ready. So it's a lot more difficult now to get something.
I mean, when it gets funded, then you have to send all the proofs.
Yeah,
and do all the stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like this one, we're, you know, we made some mistakes the first time around, and with this new game, we're gonna make less mistakes, hopefully, and we'll come up with a smoother experience, and hopefully we'll make enough from that, and we'll just keep going, and yeah.
Well, I mean, I mean, a lot of people have different ideas on, you know, like opinions on crowdfunding, but like MXPX's new record.
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
Completely crowdfunded.
Yes, and they made, what, something like $250,000?
They were like, I think it was 45% past what they needed to actually be funded. And I mean, when you look at that, if you have the fans, I mean, that's one thing. Metallica, I remember I read this interview with James Hetfield a couple years ago. He said, you know, we're going to sign to a new label or whatever, but we don't have to. He said, we're Metallica. We could put anything out we want,
right?
No matter how we do it, and people are going to buy it. And that's kind of, you know, MXPX and bands like that that have that back catalog.
Yeah, that's where you were. That's definitely where you want to be.
Yeah. You know? And I mean, and you guys, the first time it worked, so you have all these happy people. Hopefully they're happy.
Yeah, a few.
And then you're going to do it again. I see no reason why it wouldn't be, especially if it's a lower price point.
Yeah, lower funding goal. And then, you know, we can hopefully work up to larger, you know, projects.
Have you had... Have you had any, a lot of international people, right?
Oh, yeah. Lots of people from all over the world. I think, I'm trying to think of the most far-flung regions that, you know, they're uncommon. I mean, Europe is pretty common.
Did you?
You know, you get people from Europe, but like Japan, because.
Did you take into consideration before you did like the rewards and everything, the shipping for international? Dude.
That's, you know, if you wanted to get, you know, have a whole podcast dedicated to how confusing and difficult international shipping is.
It's crazy.
You know, it's insane.
I shipped a guitar to Africa one time, and I barely made any money off the guitar.
Basically, there's customs fees on top of regular shipping. The people, when they get the items, they have to pay taxes to get it. It's just ridiculous. We were able to circumvent some of those things with where our distributors were, or our fulfillment centers were located, and able to offer customs-friendly shipping to different countries and things. But, I mean, it's pretty expensive. I mean, one thing that you learn is that Switzerland is not a part of the EU.
Yeah.
when you're shipping it, I mean, that's like, yeah, that makes sense. But, you know, you don't think about that, and then you're like, you know, they get... It's just like a whole, just weird little things like that when you're dealing with that thing, shipping things out all over the world. And I did that for a little while with eBay.
Yeah.
And you know, with the shipping and the fulfillment and stuff. So it wasn't my first rodeo, but still, boy. and the Kickstarter, I don't know if you've ever had any plans on kickstarting anything or were a part of any
maybe
of that. But man. It's extremely stressful experience.
I bet.
Oh my gosh! Some guy, the administrator for some big gaming group, kind of like contacted me out of nowhere right when we launched our Kickstarter, and he's like, "Hey, can I talk to you for a minute?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And he said, "How's your stress level?" it was the first question. I'm like, "Very high." And then we went on to talk, but yeah. Yeah, it's been quite a ride, and it's been really fun too. So
let's here, I've got two more little questions. So first off, I'll say, so what's more stressful, me trying to get you to play shows and practice, or doing Kickstarter?
Hey, I love practice. You know, I'll practice all day long. I remember in our first band in Jolly Stompers, we were just livid that we were only allowed to practice for 2 hours a day at this place. I mean, we were livid.
Yeah.
You mean only practice 2 hours a day? We need to practice 4, 5, 6 hours a day, you know. Because when you love to do something.
Yeah, it's fun. It's not a job, right?
Right. But, yeah, I mean, it's, playing shows is still difficult for me in, you know, in that way. Just like many of the things that are involved in this, doing demos for games, you know, podcasts, for instance, you know, these things.
How do you feel on here? You feel pretty comfortable?
I feel pretty comfortable. I feel pretty good. I feel pretty positive.
I think it's been a pretty good episode. I'm having a good time chatting with you, man.
Yeah, it's great. So, yeah.
So, okay, so this is called That One Time on Tour. Now, I know the Widow Jenkins only toured, you know, a little bit, not a lot. Do you have a story or something that stands out from some of those shows that we played that you might want to tell us?
Let me see.
It's a hard question. I put you on the spot.
Well, boy.
Do you remember when we didn't get paid and you put a hotel room on your credit card because you just wanted to go to sleep?
I don't remember that. That sounds like something I do.
None of us had any money and we didn't get paid at the show, and we were like somewhere down south, and you're just like, screw it, here's my credit card.
Yeah, let's just do it. I remember playing a show where literally there was no one there, yeah. Literally. I think the bartender was the only person there. I think that might have been in Georgia or maybe in some southern state. I don't remember exactly.
We played in Nashville at the Muse, and there was only the bands, pretty much. I remember.
Yeah, I mean, that was like, I think it was a Tuesday night, and, you know, I don't know what happened. I remember that. Warped Tour, I remember playing that show. Oh,
so hot.
And it was just walking out from it, they had the stage set up with the air conditioner and the air conditioning coming down on top of you. And then if you would even try to venture out beyond that like wall of air conditioning, it was like, you know, oh man.
I remember that day at Warped Tour, after we got done playing, everybody kind of bailed. And so I had to get a lot of the equipment.
Yeah, yeah, I remember.
And I almost passed out. I was so hot, and the guys from Real Big Fish took me on their bus and gave me like a...
I was trying to remember what band it was. I knew it was like a band.
Well, they knew me because when I was playing with Brazil on Warped Tour, like, I got to know a couple of those guys. So, like, they saw me, like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I'm moving equipment. And they're like, you're going to pass out. And they took me on the bus and, like, nursed me back to health.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember you telling me about that. Man, you know, yeah, I'm drawing a complete blank. That's sad because, you know,
it's a long time ago.
This has been a long time. Not something I think about a lot. But, you know, I do remember, you know, this isn't a tour story, but I remember you... like calling someone from Goldfinger.
Oh, I called John.
Was it John?
Yeah, yeah. I got John's number from somebody.
You randomly got his number, and you know, we were like, we need to. I think it, what was the band that was they he'd signed and
The Used.
The Used, yeah. And we were like, hey.
Well, I think it was one of the guys from The Used that I'd met and I was kind of friendly with, like Jeff or somebody, and I got John's number, and I'm like, screw this, I'm just going to call him.
Yeah, there's like, hey, he did this with The Used, maybe he'll do that with us, and, you know, so let's just call him out of nowhere, because that's not going to freak him out or anything.
Yeah, I was stupid and young.
I mean, that was great, though. I mean, that was...
He talked to me.
Yeah, he did.
He was super nice. He's like, here's my address, send the stuff.
And then he got off the phone with you, then he called you back, like, right away and said, hey, by the way... it's cool that you called me,
but don't give out my number
to anybody.
Yeah,
yeah, that was.
Well, I met John a few times after that with other touring.
Did he ever?
I never
bring that up with him.
I never brought it up to him, but he's always been the sweetest guy.
Yeah, I mean, we meant no harm. Yeah. Obviously, you know, we just
when you're young and you want to do anything you can to like get to that next level, it's like, oh, I got this phone number for this guy. I'm just gonna call him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it could have worked.
That's a great story, man.
Mm-hmm. I remember Nass? Is that his name from Screeching Weasel? Was that the band he was in?
Squirt Gun.
And I remember his dog peeing on me once when we went down to his recording studio. I tell that story a lot.
That dog has since passed. And sorry, Mass, if you're listening out there.
Yeah, I remember that.
Rest in peace.
I didn't know what to do. I was really like, oh. That was back in the first incarnation.
That's when we played in Lafayette. Yeah, we got to go down to Sonic Iguana and see the studio. Mm-hmm. Brian was working there at the time, I think.
Mm, yeah.
Right out of school, he was working there. Cool. Well, I'll tell you what, man. We are past an hour.
I'm sure we are.
And I like to edit sometimes, but I think everything we talked about is pretty good. I'm probably going to leave most of it in.
All right.
I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I know we don't ever see each other, but you're one of my best friends. I love you, man. And some of the best times I ever had playing music was with you, writing songs was with you.
Yeah, likewise.
So is there anything now that you want to promote? Can you give like the web presence of your game company?
Yeah, if any of you listeners are into tabletop games or know anyone who's into tabletop games, card games, you know, board games, adventure games, please check out lostagegames.com. And
you guys on Twitter and everything,
We're on Twitter, you know, at Lost Age Games, on Facebook, you know, / Lost Age Games. So, yeah, check us out.
Awesome. Well, Adam, thank you very much. And maybe we'll have a part two at some point.
Maybe we will.
Talk about some other crazy stuff. We'll write down some stories we didn't get to talk about. Well, hey, thank you very much.
Hey,
and
my pleasure.
We'll see you next time, man.
And there it was, my conversation with my good friend Adam Glass from the Widow Jenkins and Lost Age Games. I had so much fun talking to Adam. I hadn't seen him in years, and hopefully it won't be years until the next time that we sit down. But we did talk a lot about the Widow Jenkins song, My Israel. So I'm going to leave you guys with that. It's a very proud moment for me. I wrote all the music for that. Adam, wrote all the lyrics and whatnot. And for some reason, it just kind of like we had a lot of songs we really, really liked, but that song seemed to resonate with people. And so if you've never heard it before, you're going to get your chance right here. If you like it and you want it, you can get it from iTunes or different places, but you can also just email me at TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com and I'll send you a free copy because I would rather just give it to you. So if you like the song and you want it, just hit me up and I will send it to you. But thank you guys so much for checking out this episode. Next week on the show, we have a good, good friend of mine, Mr. Chris Rowe from the Ataris, is going to finally be on the show. So make sure to come back next week for that. Chris and I get really deep into a lot of stuff. And it had been a long time since I'd talked to Chris, too. And it was wonderful speaking with him. So come back next week for that. And I just want to thank you guys very much. This podcast is a lot of fun, and I feel like I have my creative outlet back. Not playing in a band, it gets kind of weird. Like when your whole life is playing music and then you're no longer in a band, you're not touring, you're not like creating. This is cool because I get to talk to you guys and it seems like people actually care. So thank you guys very much for caring and for letting me into your life. And here it is, the Widow Jenkins with My Israel. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks a lot.
Take my life, turn the chime west by away. Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.